Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
There's an interesting map in the report that shows between 1997 and 2017 where county-level irrigated acreage increase and decrease. And so what you see there is that the decreases in irrigated acreage are primarily concentrated in the western United States. And this is really reflective of water scarcity, but also increasing competition for the region's scarce water resources from growing urban demand. Whereas you see in the eastern United States, that's where most of the growth has occurred.
USDA economic researcher Aaron Rosensick.
A lot of the increases in irrigated acreage over the past 20 years that we've seen in aggregate are attributable to the growth of irrigation in the eastern United States. So the southeast, places like southern Georgia, Mississippi Delta, et cetera. And this is mostly producers responding to changing growing season weather patterns. So the increasing incidence of drought, et cetera.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The partnerships that USDA is considering right now within the administrative action, I guess, or this request for information is actually being undertaken by USDA and could, and I'm going to stress that word could because they haven't committed to this, but they've raised the prospect of CCC funding being used for this.
Dr. Gary Adams is president and CEO for the National Cotton Council, talking whether we're looking at a legislative or regulatory approach when we talk about carbon markets.
The $28 billion that I talked about would be part of that overall infrastructure package. So that would be standalone legislation. But that would also add to the baseline going forward that would eventually become part of the Farm Bill debate. So I think in advance of something happening in 2023, it'll occur as a standalone piece of legislation. But then I do think it will be a focal point of the Farm Bill debate. The extent to which it gains traction is going to depend on the outcome of the 2022 elections and who holds the gavel on both the House and Senate side when the 23 debate really happens in that year. But in advance of the Farm Bill, it's going to be some type of either USDA taking an initiative on their own and using existing funding that they have or standalone legislation.
Now, you'll hear more and more talk about offsets, but according to Dr. Jesse Daystar, he's Chief Sustainability Officer with Cotton Incorporated, pay attention to insets.
I think, you know, a lot of what we're doing with the protocol is going to be, can be easily leveraged into maybe a revenue stream under carbon market type of situation. So I think that maybe it's not for all protocol members, but certainly those who want to do that. And then Gary brought up a couple terms that I didn't go into detail around, but I'll expand here. So, for example, a clothing brand has a goal of reducing climate change impacts. If they reduce their emissions in their supply chain, so cotton, for example, they can count that towards their overall reduction. And they could buy what you call an inset, which would mean they're paying you as a grower to use cover crops and reduce tillage to pull carbon into the ground. And that's in their supply chain. So it's sort of within their purview and their supply chain. But they could also buy offsets, say, from some manufacturing facility who reduced their emissions. But that's not in their supply chain potentially. So it's sort of it's an inset if a brand who makes jeans buys a carbon credit from the cotton industry. It's an offset if they bought a carbon credit from some other industry that's not related to their own. Generally speaking, insets are more valued at a higher rate than offsets because they're particular to a supply chain, and there's only so many in that supply chain. So when we think about kind of the customers of cotton, we want to make sure that they can meet their goals and that we don't sell all these carbon credits to an Exxon or some other outside industry and then leave the apparel industry in a bind. So I think there really is something to think about here is how can we create these insets that might even have a higher value that we can then pass along with the cotton in some shape or form to our customers, which then has the other benefit of making particularly U.S. cotton more attractive and really, you know, really keeps access to market that the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol is looking to do. So I think there's, you know, multiple ways to come at this, and the benefits are numerous as a way to not only meet the needs of the clothing brand, but also create a real financial opportunity for the cotton grower.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
One of the first theories that was proposed was centered around palmitic acid increasing in butter.
So it's been 1 year since the emergence of something known as Buttergate, an issue involving butter in Canada. Dr. Jackie Borman is a Purdue dairy specialist.
Palmitic acid, or C16O, has increased in popularity as a fat supplement fed to dairy cows in the past decade because of research related to increasing incorporation of palmitic acid into milk fat compared with other fat supplements. For full disclosure, some of my own PhD research, as well as others in the same laboratory, was centered around that question of incorporation of different fatty acids into milk fat. As a result of farmers being paid for milk components, this fat supplement has seen an increase in utilization because of its advantage in increasing milk fat. When we supplement C16O, it does change the fatty acid profile of milk fat because it is incorporated into milk fat at a greater rate. Palmitic acid has a melting point of around 145 degrees Fahrenheit, meaning it is a solid at room temperature. However, milk fat has to also come out of the cow's udder as a liquid, meaning milk fat cannot be solid at body temperature. Most of the fat that is contained in milk fat is in the form of a triglyceride, meaning a glycerol backbone and three fatty acids. The location of those fatty acids on the glycerol backbone and which fatty acids are present is going to determine fluidity of that milk. If you incorporate more palmitic acid into milk fat, you see an increase in butyric acid, which is a very short-chain fatty acid and going to have a very low melting point, and a reduction in some of the medium-chain fatty acids as a result. This indicates that the cow is making modifications to the fatty acid profile of milk fat in order to have milk fat that she can still get out of the mammary gland. At the University of Guelph, researchers have taken 12 butter samples and determined there is a relatively weak relationship between the amount of palmitic acid and butter firmness. However, the amount of palmitic acid in these samples is higher than they expected and is likely a result of higher palmitic acid supplementation. There are likely other factors other than palmitic acid supplementation that are contributing to butter firmness in Canada. However, diet can certainly impact the properties of butter. The reason that this story has been circulating in the dairy industry in the U.S. is Canada's response to this concern. Initially, there was a push for dairy farmers to stop feeding palmitic acid to their cows. For farmers that are paid on milk components, this would have likely had a negative impact on their profitability. This is something we likely have to be concerned about in the U.S. as well. Dairy farmers would not want lay people without all of the information to be dictating what we can feed cows if it negatively impacts our ability to make a profit.
So again, it all started in 2021 when the Canadian dairy industry received both national and international attention due to the alleged change in texture of Canadian butter, as consumers claimed that the butter was not softening at room temperature. Or really, a wider discussion sparked about dairy in Canada with strong opinions about the use of palmitic oil. And other academics and scientists have rejected those claims.
There are environmental concerns with how palmitic acid is currently being supplied to the dairy industry. And I do believe it is a topic that we need to explore in order to have long-term sustainability of the dairy industry. However, the knee-jerk reaction to harder butter should not be for us to dictate how cows are fed without all of the information. More answers are likely coming as Canada explores the culprits of Buttergate.
It's Agriculture Today.
The Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show is the oldest and largest event in the beef cattle industry, and we're headed to Houston, February 1st through the 3rd. Everything's bigger in Texas, so you can't afford to miss the massive NCBA Trade Show. Engaging speakers, outstanding education, all for the beef cattle industry. We've gone to Texas for CattleCon 2022, February 1st through the 3rd. Visit convention.ncba.org for more.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Well, Tony, the one that if you ask growers, they're going to say input cost.
Dr. Cater Hake, Vice President, Agricultural and Environmental Research at Cotton Incorporated, on one of the top concerns.
What a nightmare, seeing the increase in fertilizer cost, and seed didn't go up a whole lot, but fertilizer sure did. Chemicals, availability of chemicals, and you know, weed resistance, BT resistance, particularly to the Cry 1 and Cry 2. So those are some of the big things that, you know, really difficult. You know, one of the things that we're fortunate, again, that was done in advance, there's a lot of work looking at fertilizer rates. And we've known that a lot of the U.S. can see a reduced nitrogen application without impacting profitability. And in fact, the large blocks of studies that are done over the years have shown that, you know, about half of the locations that are selected for trials don't show an economic response to nitrogen fertilizer. So, you know, with the high price fertilizers, you know, soil testing and thinking about your rotational crops can save growers some money there. But the input cost, Tony, that's a really tough one. I struggle with.
Cody Besant is CEO with Plains Cotton Growers.
Fertilizer certainly gets the highlighted story on the front page of news cycles, but, you know, it's not just fertilizer alone. It is all input costs that we're relatively seeing increasing from herbicide to pesticide that typically producers use from an agronomic standpoint, all facets related to the agronomic side and the growing side. So, you know, we're certainly a mind of this and trying to be very, very following, and how we can strategically try to work with companies and groups, figuring out, you know, the overall reasoning behind some of the costs, whether that be directly tied to inflation or lack of product and availability, a complement of both. And then also making Congress more aware of just the exacerbating costs of rising inputs as compared to the cost of production or price received. You know, certainly the cotton industry specifically has been has had a good year as far as prices being available to them in the futures market and trying to capitalize and capture some of that. But certainly as production costs continue to rise, that margin will get thinner and thinner. So we're very mindful of that and continue to make Congress aware of that. So in the event if it really gets just more unwieldy than what it has become, that it's something that we're not trying to get them up to speed on, if they're made aware. The other thing that's not only just a rise of input costs that people are concerned about, but also product availability. It's another key aspect we're looking at for the 2022 crop year, and just making folks aware of where supply and demand is at, and what they may be expecting, and kind of have a heads up to as they start planning their 2022 season. This all kind of pivots into what people are looking at today, from starting to look at refinancing once we get into that February type month and on into March per se a little bit. But certainly folks are going to have to look at where cost of inputs are relative to availability as compared to what the potential price they could receive for their crop moving forward in planning for refinancing and trying to get their operation going for this new season. So it is certainly going to be a relatively wild season, I guess, per se, if these issues continue to persist. We're very mindful of that and watching that moving forward and try to weigh in where we can respectively to try to lessen some of that burden.
It's Agriculture Today.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
For years, cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. NextGen brand cottonseed from America. You can depend on NextGen varieties for performance and yields year after year. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Oh, and one other thing. AmeriCot is now offering cotton seed treatments to protect your seed investment against your early season challenges. To find out more, contact your local NextGen representative or seed dealer today. AmeriCot. All we do is cotton. All the time.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So the Livestock Forage Disaster Program, or LFP, as we call it in our alphabet soup, is set up to help a producer with up to 5 months' worth of feed assistance, up to 60% of the cost of the feed for cattle, based on either the last year's corn price or the last 2 years' corn prices, whichever is lower.
That's the administrator of the Farm Service Agency at USDA in Washington, D.C., Zach Ducheneau.
It's an automatic trigger. So this program is one of the standing programs that we've got that is triggered by the U.S. Drought Monitor. Folks can check that out and see where they're at on the Drought Monitor and see a chronological passage of time and how the drought's impacting them. But I'm certain that your producers that are in your listening area probably all qualify for the entire 5 month payment.
He also explains why enrolling now could help later.
So the secretary has charged us with finding better ways and more innovative ways to deliver the programs, even our ad hoc programs that we get to administer. So we're going to try to use LFP data to rule out that next batch of drought disaster assistance that was authorized in the continuing resolution last September. So part of getting your LFP application in is making sure that you also have an acreage report on file. And if the producers in your area are anything like those in mine, most of them have a pretty mature operation, and it's not changing a whole heck of a lot from year to year. So the producers do have an option when they go in for their LFP sign-up to do a multi-year acreage report so that the acreage report will be on file for next year. You can always make an amendment if your production practices change, but we encourage producers to take a look at that multi-year acreage report as an option to help streamline our services to them.
Now, obviously, this will help large producers, but what about small producers? Any impediments?
This program is tied to eligible livestock and grazing acres. So if you're out there grazing your livestock, you're encouraged to come in and participate in this because we understand that it's hard for producers in times of drought, regardless of the size. Sometimes it's even harder on the little guy, in fact.
And one of the big questions, what to do now? How to find out more and how to enroll?
So there's a couple different options. The best bet is always call your local office because they'll be the most knowledgeable about how the program is rolled out in your community. But we've got a lot of fact sheets on our website, farmers.gov, and I'm pretty free giving out my email information and whatnot across the country too, so I'm pretty easy to track down. If a producer wants to give us a message here at headquarters, we welcome that.
Now, that's the Livestock Forage Program, but there are other sign-up deadlines that are approaching as well. Administrator explains.
Deadline for general CRP is March 11th. Sign-up opens next Monday. The deadline for CRP grasslands is May 13th, and the sign-up for that will open April 4th. The best place for the producers to get their information is from their local office. They'll know how the program is rolling out locally and what the local impacts and resource concerns are, and producers are encouraged to call ahead because we are in a modified posture with the flare-up of the Omicron variant. We want to get back to that in-person communication as quickly as we can, but we got to make sure that it's safe for everybody before we do so. So call ahead to your local office, jump on farmers.gov, and check out the fact sheets that we've got there. And we look forward to seeing a robust enrollment.
It's Agriculture Today.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022 is here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit Equinom.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The demand for cattle remains good. If we look at fed cattle prices right now, they're running about $137 a hundredweight in the five areas that we track as our benchmark for steers, compared to about $110 a hundredweight a year ago.
So, Shel Shagham is a USDA livestock analyst saying demand for beef continues to be high.
So again, demand for beef is strong. That's translating into relatively strong prices for wholesale beef and working its way back to stronger packer demand.
And a lot of that demand coming from export markets. But Kent Backus with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says it's important to build new trade packs.
No, I mean, you're exactly right. You know, you always have to be looking to the future. I mean, we're gonna ride the wave of this success for a while, but you know, there are so many other markets where we don't have access. For us, you know, the beef industry, I think we need to look at markets where you know, we have a lot of similarities, or we have some other opportunities, and we have to be willing to engage in markets where people are going to tell us this is going to be tough, and so that's why we are looking at markets like the United Kingdom. You know, in Great Britain, with Brexit, they're no longer part of the European Union, so we see an opportunity there. You're talking about a culture that really appreciates beef, but you're also talking about, you know, a very sophisticated consumer class that's looking for high quality products. And you know, unfortunately, they've lived under this EU mindset for 40 years. So a lot of the production technologies that we use, the way that we have raised our beef has been highly criticized with their media and with some of their politicians. But, you know, that's been the same for us in Korea, in Japan, and in other places. And yet we've been able to gain that trust. And it's by engaging directly. So we believe that, you know, we need to prioritize a trade agreement with the United Kingdom. There's so many similarities culturally, but also just with our consumers, that we think that we'll be able to build that trust once we gain access. Because right now, we essentially have very, very limited access into Britain. And so we need to engage. We need to have those bilateral trade discussions. We need to show that a lot of the things that they prioritize, like animal health and welfare, sustainability, those are things that we prioritize. You look at the similarities in their red tractor, you know, standards program, and our beef quality assurance program, they're almost identical. When you look at their sustainability goals and our sustainability goals, there's a lot of similarities. So I think we need to, you know, we need to engage, and we need to help them embrace a more science-based approach. And at the end of the day, though, you know, we're going to have to earn the trust of those consumers. But we have to get our foot in the door, and we have to do that with a bilateral agreement. And there's a, you know, precursor to a bilateral agreement is we also need trade promotion authority restored. You know, without trade promotion authority, that really limits what our negotiators can do. And so we need Congress to restore trade promotion authority, to work with the administration to get that up and running, because we need our negotiators out there, you know, not just maintaining what we have, but we need to take new ground, and we need to get more access so that our producers can remain competitive.
It's Agriculture Today.
For the better part of a century, Capital Farm Credit has partnered with farmers, ranchers, agribusinesses, and rural landowners. We're the largest rural lender in Texas, and our members share in the profits with one of the strongest patronage programs in the country. We return almost 100% of our earnings, which helps you with the cost of borrowing. Let us share profits with you. CapitalFarmCredit.com.
Did you know that the world-famous Café du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like at Café du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What we've learned most as NFU has advocated through our Fairness for Farmers campaign, where we've helped uplift the voices of farmers, union members, and our neighbors across the country. Members have spoken up about the lack of competition in for a market for what they grow and produce or for what their inputs are. But also we hear about our rural communities are worse off because there are fewer retail options, there are fewer grocery options, there's fewer banking options. Those sorts of issues of consolidation, lack of competition, aren't limited to agriculture in rural communities. They hit many of our institutions and many of our commercial lives, I guess.
Mike Strands is Vice President of Advocacy with the National Farmers Union.
So that's been a common refrain there, and I think as you look out across all of the policy arena right now, you're hearing from other parts of the economy, not just agriculture, but also tech. You're hearing from retail, you're hearing from grocers, you name it, where the smaller players in those industries want to have a chance to succeed. And without competition, that's really limited.
And it's somewhat tied to the 2023 Farm Bill.
So it appears the agriculture committees are signaling that they'll be starting up hearings directly on the Farm Bill, kind of doing some background and setting the stage for more consideration and debate in the next year and 9 months before the current bill expires. So the Farm Bill show is about to start, so to speak. Farmers Union is entering this phase of the year where our state conventions are wrapping up right now. We've gotten a lot of ideas that have sprung forth from those conventions on policy positions. We've got our National Policy Committee has been meeting, considering those changes and what updates they want to make to our national policy document, identifying some special orders of business. And from those, I expect we'll see some Farm Bill priorities start to crystallize. I think many of the principles that we've held up over the years, whether it's making sure that there's competition in the marketplace, that we're not in a position where we're pitting farmer against farmer, but instead making sure that we're, got a managed supply in a lot of cases where we're not kind of in a race to lower prices. Those sorts of approaches I expect to see reflected in what our members consider and adopt, but the proof will be clear when we have the convention in just a couple weeks here in Denver.
You don't have to wait till 2023 for the next convention for National Farmers Union.
We'll be meeting for our 120th anniversary convention in Denver from February 27th through March 1st. And this will be in person. So we'll be back after being virtual last year. At the convention, like I said, there will be a lot of policy debate and discussion and adoption. But it's also a chance for Farmers Union members to get back together in person after a long time apart in many cases. So we'll also hear from a host of speakers who will be talking about, our Fairness for Farmers efforts and what sort of work our campaign has taken on and how they can speak out and have their voice heard. We'll do some retrospectives of sorts and consideration about what the pandemic has exposed about some of the trouble spots in our communities and how workers have had to respond to that. I think that'll be pretty interesting. We'll have a whole set of other breakout sessions as well. And we'll have some fun when we're there, too. So we're all looking forward to some time in Denver.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Take the guesswork out of preparing your cotton for harvest with NanoPro. Utilizing NanoPro's revolutionary nanoliquid technology, your harvest aids go to work faster and more efficiently, increasing leaf drop, reducing regrowth, and helping your cotton be ready when you are. Offering a 3-to-1 return on investment, you can't go wrong with NanoPro. Learn more or find your nearest dealer by calling Tracy Carrillo at 575-639-5110 or visit aquayield.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
Some critics say that the administration's doing nothing to make China live up to its commitments in the Phase 1 trade agreement or to do other things to boost agricultural trade in general.
It's not correct to suggest that we haven't done anything.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack telling the House Ag Committee this week that, yes, the Chinese are $16 billion light on their promised ag product purchases.
And they are also light on 7 very important sanitary and phytosanitary barriers.
But Vilsack also told at the hearing,
there is an ongoing negotiation with China, and so we're putting them on notice that we want them to live up to the Phase 1 agreement.
And Vilsack reminded lawmakers of several other recent actions on trade, including winning a dispute with Canada on its dairy trade policies, opening up the market in India to U.S. pork, and also overall, he says U.S. ag exports set a record last year, projected to do so again in 2022, which is
One of the reasons why commodity prices across the board are significantly stronger and higher than they were a year ago.
Gary Crawford, Washington.